from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in the hour ahead, we talk first with California State Treasurer Bill Lockyer, who recently announced his retirement. That's after 46 years in politics. He'll join us from Sacramento to discuss his decision to retire and his lengthy career in public service, which has included terms as California's Attorney General and head of the state Senate. Then in the second half hour of the program, we bring you the director and the composer and librettist of the San Francisco Opera's latest production, The Gospel of Mary Magdalene, which premieres next week. Forum is next. Join us right after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. California State Treasurer Bill Lockyer recently announced his retirement after 46 years in politics. He joins us this Forum segment from Sacramento to discuss his decision to retire and his lengthy career in public service, which has included terms as California's Attorney General and 25 years in the state legislature, including as the head of the state Senate. And we welcome Bill Lockyer to this Forum segment. And do I congratulate you? I thought they'd have to take you out in a box.
I was wondering as well. Some of my friends say my real goal was to hold every statewide elected office, and that really wasn't the goal, but I did my share.
Well, you did have as a goal to be governor. That may be one of the regrets in this long and stellar career of yours, that you never, well, got to sit in the executive office.
You're right, and I found that I had executive management skills as Attorney General and Treasurer. I got to work at that and would have wished to have had an opportunity to be governor. I think I could have put a good team together and provided good leadership. But there, like every profession, there's opportunities that come and go, and there just was never an opening for the years were relevant for me.
Well, I think even some of your political opponents would have to agree that it's been a stellar career and really remarkable number of achievements. What are you most proud of, though? I was thinking maybe the Bay Trail.
If I were talking about something tangible like that, that wasn't program or law, I would say the Bay Trail. And, of course, there are lots and lots of people that have worked on the segments in their area, hometown, backyard, park district, whatever. And that collectively, it's made it a very successful effort. I'm delighted to have been the sort of godfather of it. And it makes me think of this. You know, we all have heard how the truism of necessity is the mother of invention, and this may be an example of the opposite truth, that invention being the mother of necessity. Having created the idea, it became part of every local candidate's platform of things they were going to do, along with efficient government and fighting crime. They were going to complete the Bay Trail in their region, and so it was a good contribution to the culture.
Well, the San Francisco Bay Trail, by the way, is a bicycle and pedestrian trail that will eventually allow continuous travel around the shoreline of San Francisco Bay. How far along are we?
About 350 miles of the approximately 500. And then there are various sort of spokes and pockets that are under development. And it was a little bit of the inspiration for the Ridge Trail, the sort of analog at the top of the hill rather than the bottom. And when I talked with other policymakers at the time to see if I could get some enthusiasm built up, it became kind of the idea that was applied to Chesapeake Bay and other places in the country. So, it was in Germany. You know, nice thing.
Well, you know, you look back at your record, and I did. We go back a long way in terms of
yes.
on different sides of the microphone, but a lot of environmental pioneering, actually first aid hate crime legislation. It's a very impressive record, to put it mildly. People probably remember more the tort reform that you were involved in because of the napkin deal. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, well, you know, and it's partly the theater associated with the work that makes this maybe memorable. There had been wars between the plaintiff's lawyers and their allies and group of insurance companies, business interests and others, doctors, hospitals that fought against them with respect to who can sue when and what are the rules. And I was chairing the Senate Judiciary Committee at the time and had resolved to try to work out a lot of these conflicts. And so there were actually about a dozen bills that were negotiated that addressed various issues. I guess the easiest to explain is a higher and more rigorous standard to assert or prevail on a punitive damage claim against a defendant. There were a lot of others as well. So there was this package of bills. It was successful. They passed. And we had a kind of celebratory dinner at one of the local restaurants in Sacramento. And people were saying, you know, this was really terrific. This is how the legislature should work and be able to work through differences and effectuate sensible compromises that make everybody feel like the system somehow accommodates their needs, at least part of the time. And why don't we promise to work together, have a peace pact? And the napkin deal was really the peace pact. It wasn't the legislation. Now, a lot of columnists have written the bill was written in the restaurant story because it's much more interesting. But the truth is, it's the peace pact. That pact lasted for a number of years, but then hostility sort of ensued as people moved on.
Well, that was the theater part of it. You also got some theater, and you've always been known as a guy who shoots from the hip, rhetorically and verbally, when you talked about Ken Lay sharing a cell with somebody named Spike who would call him Honey. And there were people who said this is an endorsement of prison rape. You had to wind up apologizing, I guess, didn't you?
Well, I apologize in the sense that it certainly wasn't meant to be an advocate or agreeing or supporting or thinking prison rape was something tolerable. And yes, there were, I think, people that misunderstood or wanted to make that argument. So I just said, well, I apologize. That's not certainly what I meant. It was descriptive. What the context was this. Gray was governor. I was attorney general.
Gray Davis.
Gray Davis was fighting with the energy companies to try to not have these huge spikes in energy prices in the state of California. He called me and said, Bill, can you do something? They're just, you know, very muscular. They need to understand that there could be lawsuits or fight backs. And I said, well, yeah. And so I figured, well, I'll talk to the Wall Street Journal because the business community reads it. And I talked to them, not really realizing at the time, wanting to be send a message. And of course, Ken Lay was regarded as the icon of this new economy. I thought he was a crook, and that the model was flawed, and that they were.
You may recall, patients. Former President Bush called him Kenny Boy, right?
Yeah, and in fact, I got calls at the time when I took him on. Not about whether it was allowing for rape. It wasn't. I just got much too carried away with the comment, and it was really meant to be descriptive rather than some recommendation of what the prison environment, unfortunately, is often like. But as of course we subsequently found out, I was right. He was a crook. They were rapacious. One of the things I feel good about as Attorney General, I was able actually to recover a couple of billion dollars from those companies on behalf of energy consumers in the state of California. But yes, there are times when I wish I would have buttoned it.
We're talking with Treasurer Bill Lockyer, who was at one time thinking about running for controller, too, in 2014 to cover, as he said, many of the offices in the state. What's your thoughts now about we talked a good deal. In fact, we talked a whole hour yesterday about the new budget. Who would have thought, you know, no deficit, a balanced budget, extra money, extra revenue. But a lot of social services have been cut, and you probably as a legislator and as a political figure, we're more on the side of, I suppose, what might have been characterized or might still be characterized as the liberal part of the Democratic Party. In fact, we had Senator Huff on from the Republican side yesterday who was saying, well, we got this hand dealt with us, but at least Governor Brown took some more conservative views that were in line with us as the GOP. What's your thought about the budget?
I think it's a good one. And I've been for a number of years urging a rediscovery of the old discipline of balanced budgets. So I'm pleased that the governor has been insisting on that and the legislature is in agreement. It's a lot easier to do when you can enact a budget with a majority vote and not kind of have these requirements of a new business tax cut or some other policy that is insisted on by the minority party in order to put up a couple of votes to pass a budget. So that change in the law that the voters made has been a very significant cause of some of this discipline. It's good. There's things I worry about. One of the numbers that often doesn't get mentioned because some still like to say that, gee, there really is a spending problem, not a revenue problem in California. Well, Brown's budget contemplates spending about $5.42 of every $100 of personal income. Ronald Reagan, when he was governor, was spending $6.02. And so, you know, to keep it in perspective, I understand the tolerance of tax levels or cost of living or other things may vary, but Reagan was spending substantially more than Brown.
Let me tell you how you can join us in the segment with Treasurer Lockyer. And by the way, we only have until the half-hour mark, so if you have something you'd like to ask him or if you have something you'd like to say to him as he prepares to go into retirement, we welcome your involvement in the program. Our toll-free number is available now. It's 866-733-6786. You can join us from anywhere on that number. Again, 866-733-6786, or feel free to email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. You can also, of course, tweet us, our Twitter handle, @KQEDForum, or go to our Facebook page. You know, for the last year and a half, you've been dealing with a lot of personal problems, we don't necessarily have to enumerate them. They've been made public, but your wife's publicized drug abuse and extramarital affair and arrest on drug and misdemeanor child abuse and endangerment charges. And I heard you say before we went on the air that you're the single dad now, but you filed for divorce and withdrew those papers in March saying you were going to try to reconcile. How much do these personal issues play into your decision to retire from politics?
Not very much. They're always – I've been involved with 18 legislative races and 8 statewide campaigns. So family is always a consideration. It's one of the factors that you weigh, but it's not uniquely so in this instance. You know, I thought about what I want to do for the next 10 years or so of my work life, and having done a fiscal state work for the last 6 years, and it'll be 8 by the time I go, I realize I just want to do something new, and it's not be controller. That's a job with its challenges and things that about which I'm curious and interested, but it's just not doing that. And so
do you have some hint of what that new thing would be for you? Or?
No, I really don't. And I think I've got a year or more to kind of think it through. It's not a secret that I had an interest in spending a decade working at the state a college system because I think we've disinvested in education and we need to really rescue higher education and actually the whole education system in California in very significant ways. That didn't work out for reasons that I respect and understand, but it's time to do something different.
Can I make a suggestion? I know it may be a cliche, but recently I saw Ron George, Chief Justice, and he's writing essentially the work he's done for California and on behalf of California as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court and member of the California State Supreme Court. You have been in these vineyards for so many years, probably a lot of people would be gratified to be benefiting from your wisdom and putting it down on paper.
That's a maybe. I read a lot and a variety of things, and I find increasingly I ask myself when I'm reading, it's a different kind of reading. It's, could I have written this? And the answer is generally no, and which makes me somewhat skeptical about the capacity to do that. I guess the secret I'm told by writers, and you're one, is, you know, 3 pages a day.
So sometimes you're lucky if you get a paragraph a day, but
yeah, I understand.
You got some great stories, though, Bill.
It's on the list, but I don't know, Michael.
I was going to say you got some great stories. Didn't you almost get in a dust up with Elliot Spitzer, getting a fight with him, almost literally yeah. Duking it out at one point?
Yeah, that's
when you were both attorneys. Attorney General. What was that over?
It was more the way Elliot treated the other attorneys general. He's brilliant. He's successful. We're actually friends. I like him. But he had a kind of condescending attitude with them. And at one of the meetings of the AGs, I just told them that in very blunt ways. And, you know, his reaction was, well, we're going to go outside. And we went outside. And he said, well, why did you say that? And I said, because it's true. He said, well, yeah, you're right. And he left. But anyhow, it was a very anticlimactic ending, but a little drama in theater in the public setting. AG, you know, I take pride in sort of being the technology AG. People often don't realize the law office that's so visible there. It's about a third of the assets. And so whether it was things like finding more than a couple hundred thousand DNA samples in the refrigerator, not digitized, so they weren't being used to produce cold hits of crimes, getting that kind of work done moved us from solving one crime a year to about 20 a day when I left. And, you know, those are typically crimes against women and children that go unprosecuted unless they develop that sort of evidence.
It's part of your legacy, and I want to bring our callers in here. Let's go to Jerry first. Jerry, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I worked with Bill Lockyer back in the early 90s with Bill Graham on a ticket scalping, Bill, and I really admired the man and how hard he worked and how devoted and dedicated he was to it. I mean, he even took a punch from a member of the assembly over this bill. I think it was Representative Floyd from Gardena came over to the Senate one day, if I remember.
There's another pugilist story I didn't know.
Yeah, another very good friend who's passed away. But, this was an unsuccessful effort. I was sponsoring this legislation that Bill Graham had proposed to try to address ticket scalping in ways that were so unfair to artists and customers. And it was the toughest legislative fight I think I ever had because the pro tem, David Roberti of the Senate, and the minority leader, Ken Matty, were both vigorously opposed to the bill. And I worked so hard to get it off of the Senate floor. And then my buddy Willie Brown just had it sent to a committee that was a graveyard committee in the assembly. And that was the end of the effort. But it was a lot of hard work, you're right. And I think the right policy.
Let me thank Jerry for the call. Those are the days when they called former Mayor Brown the Ayatollah of the California legislature. Let me bring another caller on here, and that's Hugh from Oakland. Good morning.
Yeah, I want to thank Bill Lockyer for his years of service, and I'm happy that he's finding a new career path. Just wanted to comment on the remarks about public spending being reduced compared to the time of Ronald Reagan. That might be true in averages. However, that doesn't necessarily apply for large segments of the population, especially after Prop 13 skews, older citizens towards less spending, wealthier generation spending less in taxes, whereas the younger generation is spending a lot more, as well as, of course, the wealthy spending a lot less on a percentage basis. So those percentages shouldn't be painted overall, especially for those of us who are younger and in the middle class. It's more challenging now in California.
Well, I certainly respect the challenge. I'm not sure I agree with the claimed trend, but as a general matter in our society, we're spending, I think, a disproportionate and unwise amount on the senior side of the population, whether it's services or tax policy, compared to younger, and particularly the disinvestment in education is really unwise. Now, the percentage of personal income taxes paid by different folks, yes, it's grown substantially, and if you were to just look at, say, the top 1% of wage earners, their share of the income pool in California in the last dozen years or so has almost doubled from about 12 or 13% to 22%. They are paying a lot of taxes, but certainly not ones that reflect the success that they've had.
Let me ask you a question that's just come in over our website. Jurgis says, I would appreciate Mr. Lockyer's comments regarding the legacy of Prop 187. That's, of course, the anti-illegal immigration, a measure which was overwhelmingly passed by the California voters and overturned by a lower court, and whose refusal to be defended by then-Governor Gray Davis proved to be the major factor that led to his recall. This apparently set an unfortunate precedent, as evidenced by Jerry Brown's similarly illegal refusal to defend Proposition 8. If Prop 187 were to be presented to the voters today, would it pass, in your humble opinion, Mr. Lockyer?
I think the mood has changed substantially. I was an opponent of 187, so I admit, I guess, a disagreement with the commentator. A federal court had ruled that almost all of it was unconstitutional and a state enactment that violated federal law and constitutional provisions. So it wasn't something you could correct. Now, should it have been appealed? Well, it was taken to the Ninth Circuit, where they have a process to try to work up appellate issues and see if mediation is possible. And it kind of vanished there. But the judgments at the time were that the reasoning of the a federal judge that heard the trial was so compelling about the constitutional claims and defects that it just would have been a waste of taxpayers' money. Prop 8, similarly, of course, I uncomfortably felt some duty to at least see that there was an appellate decision rendered on the topic.
We're at the end of the segment here, unfortunately, okay. Bill Lockyer, but I want to thank you and wish you the best as you go off into the sunset. You've earned a great deal of respect from California voters and citizens, and appreciate all of the public service that you've provided.
Thank you, Michael.
Another segment ahead, we're going to talk about an opera.